Well, welcome everybody to the fourth occasional lecture sponsored by the World Oral Literature Project here in Cambridge. It's an initiative affiliated to the University Museum of Archaeology and Anthropology, and we're working to document and make accessible endangered oral literatures before they disappear without record. Now, as we near the end of our second year of operations, I'm delighted by the interest that we've had in particularly our supplemental grants program. We've given out 18 grants to field workers around the world, some of whom are here, and also our now lively occasional paper series, the third one is just going to press, and also our workshops. There's one coming up in December, 10th and 11th of December, so for those who are interested, that's going to be a good date. John Miles Foley from the University of Missouri, a great specialist in oral traditions, is giving the keynote. So do visit the website to be informed of what we're doing and updates about the project. But you've not come here to listen to me, but to our speaker, so allow me with a few words to introduce him. Dr. Takubo is Professor of Linguistics at Kyoto University in Japan. He's written a great deal on Japanese, as well as, more recently, some of the endangered languages and cultures of Japan. He'll speak to us today on the Digital Museum Project for the Languages and Cultures of Ryukyu, the case of Ikema Ryukyuan. Welcome to Cambridge, Takubo-san, and over to you.
Thank you very much. Thank you for the introduction. I'm from Kyoto University and also associated with NIJI, which is National Institute of Japanese and Linguistics, which is a newly reorganized organization dealing with the Japanese language, especially the endangered dialects of Japan, and doing a lot of archiving. And part of the project, and I was told by the president of NIJI to explain what the institute is about. And this work is in joint work with Tamaki Motoki and her digital contents production team at Kyoto University. The goal of our project, Kema project, is to design a prototype for the web-based museum for an endangered language that is easily updatable and easily extendable, and to provide a forum in which local people can exhibit their language products and to allow local people more access to their language and help preserve the language and culture of the local community. And here's the content. I'll first do the overview of the language and the community and introduce our research group. And I will explain a little bit about the design features of the museum and also give an account of some special features of the digital museum. And lastly, I will do some demonstration. Here's the overview of the language and community. Ikema is a sub-dialect of Miyako Ryukyuan, one of the five major dialects of Ryukyuan. And as you may probably know, Ryukyuan is the only language that has been proven to be genetically related to Japanese. But sometimes it's been introduced and described as a dialect of Japanese, but it is not. Most dialects of Ryukyuan are endangered, and Ikema is not an exception. Here's a map. This is Japan, and Ryukyuan archipelago is here. And here's our island, Miyakojima, and Ikema is here. And the people in Ikema have migrated to Iraba Island, Sarahama in Iraba Island, and Nishihara in Miyakojima Island. So Ikema is spoken in three places, Ikema, Sarahama, and Nishihara. Okay. Here's the degree of endangerment of intergenerational language transmission. And there are some criteria and indexes. Safe, vulnerable, definitely endangered, severely endangered, critically endangered, and extinct. And languages spoken in Japan, of the languages spoken in Japan, only Japanese is spoken in the mainland Japan is safe. And Okinawa, Kunigami, Amami, Miyako, Hachijo, definitely endangered, and Yayama, Yonaguni, are severely endangered. And Ainu is either critically endangered or dead. And all these languages, all the languages except for Ainu are genetically related to Japanese, some sister language of Japanese. And Ikema, the Ikema is spoken at Ikema Island. As I was saying, Sarahama in Naraba Island, and Nishihara or Nishibe in Miyako Island. And there are approximately 2,000 speakers, and fluent speakers are in the 50s or older. But I've recently learned that there are two middle school students who are considered to be native speakers of the language. So there are some younger speakers here in Sarahama. And here the genealogical tree. Here's the genealogical tree of the Rukyun. And Japanese is here, and Rukyun is divided into northern Rukyun languages and southern Rukyun languages. And northern Rukyun languages include Amami dialects and Okinawa dialects, including Kunigami. And southern Rukyun includes Miyako dialects, or some. And the Yayama dialect and Yonaguni dialect. I have called these language or languages as dialects, but they're mutually unintelligible to each other. So I've been studying Miyako for 5 or 6 years, but I can't understand any of the languages unless I study, I make a lot of study beforehand. And here is Ikema, is a sub-dialect of Miyako, and there are other dialects, and some of the dialects are mutually unintelligible. For example, in Tarama, which is located somewhere around here, I've done some field work on Tarama, but I couldn't make out most of the speeches of Tarama. And Irabu is a little bit different too. And so there are dialects, and sometimes mutually intelligible, but very, very different. There's a research group that this was a 2-year project, and also extended for 1 year. So it's going to be a 3-year project by a group of linguists and contents production team, or digital contents production team at the Department of Digital Content Research, Kyoto University, and with the help from some anthropologists. And first year, we did some basic design of the prototype with division space with rich interfaces. And second year, we constructed the updating system. And this is going to be the third year, but we haven't been able to finish. So I'm planning to apply for the extension of another year. And last time, when I gave this talk at Source, last June, I think, somebody asked me to give a speech in this dialect. I was not able to do so, but so I asked him, Mr. Nakama, the former principal of Miyako High School. This is something that he would say, when he was asked to do that. Can be read. Baga nai ya nakama te dai tauka hima nakama. Yo yabitun nan. Okay, that's Ikema. And this is what he was saying. My name is Nakama, which means company, and Takahima Nakama. I'm called company, although I'm alone. And if you're Yabiton, I'm very happy to meet you. Okay. So, about the research team. So, he was one of our consultants, and he's doing a lot of work in helping us meet people and do interviews for us. And the members of our research group is linguists and researchers from UCLA, University of Alberta, Duke University, Stanford University. And I've been doing, we've been doing field work in the Kema and other dialects in the Yaku Islands since January 2006. And we have recorded over 500 hours, or 550 hours probably, natural discourse and interviews and elicitation sessions. And also the digital content production team who specializes in video shooting and editing, illustration, web design, content direction, and the most of the activities supportive digital content production for universities in Japan, like teaching materials, information materials, web space, video, and so forth. So now the main thing, we are, as I was saying, we are constructing a digital museum for the preservation of Ikema Miyakuan. And this museum has is a four-layered web-based museum and consists of two spaces. One is the open space and the other is the closed space. And the open space consists of the exhibit space, and which houses permanent special exhibition and library and references. And closed space contains closed library and archives and data storage space. And we haven't finished this one yet, closed space, because of the web space. We have to buy web space, and we've run out of money. So it's not connected. It's simply in the closed space is simply a standalone computer hard disk of 2 or 3 terabytes. And closed access space will consist of closed library and archives, which are accessed only by closed members and houses past exhibits and files with transcription, other updated archiving information stored. And also deep below there should be data storage space accessed only by a research group and raw data files with basic metadata stored there. An open access space will consist of exhibit space, and there should be a special exhibition room and permanent exhibition room. And we haven't done any special exhibition yet. If there are demands, I will exhibit some special exhibition. And the design of the permanent room is characterized by indexing by location and indexing by timeline. So here's an example, indexing by location. This is a map of the village called Nishihara, one of the places where Ikema is spoken. And then there's this index here and there, but it should be here. And then if you click on that index, then the video will appear and she'll narrate a story related to the location. And usually the kind of activities that she did when she was young. Okay. And here's the index by timeline. And here is the a lady, and she will narrate a story of Tamuru firewood gathering when she was young. Okay, and there will be some other episodes indexed by timeline. And here's another indexing by timeline. It's the year in Nishihara. There is the chart gives you annual festivals, and if you click on one of the items, then the video screen will appear, and it will play this one. And there is an explanation of the festival and the pictures. So that's the basic design of the museum. And but why use the metaphor of museum? And another, why do we need an exhibit space of a museum rather than a rich archive? The purpose of the exhibit space, which is open to public, is twofold. One is to provide a forum for local people, and the another is the for the growth of the data files, more metadata added. As I was saying, the use of an exhibit space is to provide a forum for local people. So important events in the community are recorded for exhibits for younger generation to watch and learn. The recordings serve as manuals, as it were, for performing the events. So for example, the shooting of Miyako Tsutsu festival for reporting today is the names of the newborn babies for the year. We've recorded 24 hours and of the festival continues like 4 days, and we've recorded 24 hours of the festival and edited it to 45 minutes with explanations with the help of local people. And we copied them and distributed them to local people. And younger people learn, you know, watch the DVD and learn how to perform the events. So it serves as as some sort of manual. And if they have digital access, then they can watch the festival at home. And also, some people are doing working very hard to preserve the language and try to create some literary, you know, work or some performances or that. So, for example, principal of a nursery school, Mrs. Chieko Hanashiro, writing a stories for children, a picture book for children, actually. And there, she's going to narrate the story to children at her nursery school in Nishida. So we've recorded the narration and added some pictures, very beautiful pictures, and we put it on the web so that mothers can watch the story. And also, local people are very active in performing lots of dances and sings, and they have combined. They have created some sort of vernacular drama called "The Founding of Nishara," and this is a musical drama performed by local people. You know, more than 90 people attending, I mean participating. So we have, and they have recorded it and made it into a DVD. So we have translated the drama and put subtitles and put it on the web so that, you know, younger people can understand what their mothers or grandmothers are saying. That's for local people. They can, you know, make up stories. They can make up, you know, dance performances and things. Then we can record and put it on the web so that they can watch and enjoy and learn. And there's also another side that's a metadata updating through exhibition. The file, so for example, we go to the field make many recordings and bring them back to our school, right, and put it on the hard disk. And the most of the files will not be utilized, right, for further use. But if you required or compelled to put it on the website for exhibition for some people to enjoy, then we have to do some transcriptions and add some explanations and make that into some kind of a story. So that will be an incentive for the students and for us to add more metadata to the recording we've made. And the file coding, all these transcriptions and all the translations and things made by researchers in one field, like linguistics, can be utilized by researchers in other fields, for example, anthropologists, and vice versa. So sound and movie files get more metadata. They go from archives, deep down from upper space, exhibit space. That's why we need exhibit space. So it's something like this. This is the outbound axis, and we have the data storage space, and we process it and make contents for exhibition, transcription, translation, movie edition, adding comments, then do some exhibition. Then after the exhibition, it can come down with more metadata added than the recording here. That's the idea of open access added to the archive. And here's some of special features of the museum. And as I was saying, we aim for the museum which is easy to update, and a lot of links. So updating the site will be done through the internet by researchers themselves, not by web designers, by filling the templates. And display is basically independent of the particular programs used, and the web is constructed according to the standards set by W3C, World Wide Web Consortium, as much as possible. So here's how the updating will be done. These are all programs, and we don't have to do that. We just fill in templates, and will be converted into the web page. And here's the update. The page looks the same as the one made by previous methods, programs, programming. And the use of films. One file can be used for various exhibits, and links to the same file are made from various spaces. And I'll use the demo. And one of the same file can be shown in different ways at different places. I'll look at demo for that too. And the system, once completed, can easily be used for creating sites for other language and cultures. Mm-hmm. Ideally, of course.
Mm-hmm. Once completed.
Once finished. Here is another feature. And we have come up with a very easy way to create a website of subtitles by using Elon. We make a subtitle data using Elon SRT file, and the web page uses different file, movie file, than the Elon file. So we simply convert. We have the digital contents team have come up with a very simple way to convert, automatically convert the file into a readable form. And so here's how it is done. It seems to be easy because I could do it. And this is still very complicated, and we're planning to make that much, much easier. So that's the basic idea of the digital museum, and we'll go into some demonstration. Here's the top page. And one to the Apple Island. And we are planning to make four rooms for the museum. And eventually we're going to make 20 sites for storing digital contents. But we have only come up with the site for Nishara Village, and the Iraku site will be finished in a year or so. And the site is basically in Japanese, and we only, you know, made the English version, the English page for the presentation in Hawaii. So not everything is in English, not bilingual, not everything is bilingual. So this is the exhibition entrance page, and that's me doing recordings. And this is Professor Iwasaki of UCLA. And this is the exhibition hall. This is a picture of Nishihara. All these utaki are some sort of a shrine where the festival will take place. This is the place is a very interesting place for anthropologists, and a lot of anthropologists are studying rituals there. At least four or five doctoral dissertations have been written dealing with the rituals in that area, and one of them is in our team. And here's the location of Miyako. And basic data and climate industries. These are actually fillers, not serious exhibits. We have to, you know, create everything anew. And this is rice wine, distilled rice wine, very good. And this is a filler too. This is a picture of the town. There are about 2,000 people are living in that area, and of which probably about 500 are fluent in the language. This was under construction a year in Shana. So this is the timeline index, and only one of them is alive. I'm going to make that a little bit bigger and with subtitles. You know, most of the festivals are for female members, but this one is for men. He's the president of the senior members club. This, you know, making speeches, they're always making speeches, actually. And the speech is performed, delivered in a mixture of standard Japanese and the local dialect. And if they speak in both local dialect, nobody would understand, no Japanese would understand. He knows.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And here's the personal data. This is one of our early recordings, so we are shooting it with our hand camera, so it's moving a little bit. We're going to replace it. We have a good one for the same recording, but we didn't have time to put that here. And here's some food, pictures of some food. It's very nice. This guava. And probably more pictures. And here's the local index. Place index, and there are only two dots here. But we want to place at least 30 or 40 dots, with each dot recording the button for recordings.
あるんだな。ぐらい来たな。このアミみたいにだと。最後頃から言うと。もう最後に最後。これをね、月でのいいな。友達付き合いに。じゃあ最初だね。最初だね。言ってた。3キロぐらいも出てた。友達最後の。
This is also one of our earlier recordings, so she knows that we don't understand a word of what she will be saying when she spoke in local dialect. So she's mixing a lot of standard Japanese. They're all bilinguals. None of them are monolingual. This again, this is the same film, same video. So the same recording is made use of for local, I mean, the local activities, and for timeline, and go into a different story sets. And here's an explanation of some account of the religion, religious aspect of Miyakuzutsu. As I was saying, there are more than 50 festivals a year to which local females must attend. It's a lot of work. And this is one of the most important things. And there's some explanation of the festival. This is text is prepared by Mary Hirai, who is an anthropologist, who's written a doctoral dissertation dealing with the local religion of this community. And we have also provided some data for linguists and history of the language, which is not finished, and we are trying to make a glossary or dictionary, bilingual dictionary or trilingual dictionary for the language, but we have not been able to finish it. Just a sample. It's just a sample, and it's all empty. This is the only live link. And there are no example of pronunciation. We'll be able to provide full links to all the data. In 2 years or so. Study room. And in the sketch of the language, we're planning to construct a grammar book, a reader, and a basic conversational page. So, for example, if you open, this is the only live link. You can learn self-introduction using the dialect. And I don't think this one is alive. No. And here is some reader. And I think this one is alive. This is the speech, basic speech pattern that most local people have to learn when they're 45. You have to make speeches when you enter a special group of some ritual performing group, okay, at 45 or 46, I forgot, male 45, female 47, or something like that. And they do that for 7 years for men and 10 years for women. And these are a little bit different from the usual daily conversation style, so you have to learn it heart by heart. And they can utilize these films or page to practice. And This is the actual performance. Maybe it's not working. This is if it works properly, then there's this transcription of the speech, and there are there will be translations. Working. Okay. These are freshmen, and these are our senior members of the community. So they have to make speeches. It's very important that they do a good, you know, performance in delivering speeches. There are some other contents, and we also we've been making picture books for children. We are making that into this is digital contents, but we're trying to make a hardcover picture book, and I think it's going to come out the beginning of next year or so. So we have two stories, all recorded, and made that into a book with a CD. And there are also other content. This is the musical drama performed by local people to commemorate the 45th birthday of the Senior Members Society there. Maybe I'll play the one with subtitles with I'm afraid the subtitles are in Japanese, I think. For this film, the subtitles are all in Japanese, and this one is a kind of transcription to represent the pronunciations. Of this is the orthography with devised, and this is the translation. He's very young, but maybe he cannot speak the language, just memorized all the, you know. This hall is very big. It can house like 500 people, and there are probably more than 500 people at this occasion. On this occasion, so this drama, a musical drama, depicts the migration of their people from Ikema to Nishiada, where they live now, 134 years ago. And these people are very young, like in their 20s, so they can't speak the language. And there will be a very interesting scene. The younger members of the group. They're all laughing. You know, the stories are very, very serious, but they are laughing because the language is very strange, you know, these younger people. He's very good. So, oops. So this is the making of the Nishiada village. And there's also... this one. We'll get this one. Oops. This is a lecture given by the principal, Mr. Nakama. And this is a classroom at the Kyoto University. And he's giving a lecture all in the local dialect. So direct method teaching by Ikema, you know, to our students. He gave two lectures, probably 90 minutes lecture, two installments. And they were all recorded and transcribed and put on the website. We haven't done the transcriptions of everything yet. And I think there are some others, but I think this is it.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Professor Takubo, for this overview and then demonstration of a very interesting and actually quite unusual resource in terms of what you're trying to do. Perhaps, since we have a few minutes for questions, if you're willing to take some, I could kick off with a provocative one and ask you whether there's any resistance among the community to have this resource called a museum. I wonder whether the term museum, I mean, one imagines a public going in, consuming, participating, increasingly interacting, challenging sometimes the exhibits. And then you mentioned after an exhibit is complete, it would go to closed access. Can it ever come out again from the closed access? Because once it's been public, you would think it's kind of public domain. So do people in the community, do speakers of Ikema, ever challenge the idea of a museum?
I don't know yet. They might have some, you know, resilience or resistance to the idea of being called inside museum. Actually, what I've been doing in terms of the relationship with local people is that make that into a DVD, part of it, and distribute it to the local people, and they like that part. But if this is closed, because we haven't asked all the people in the museum whether they like it, whether they like to see themselves in the web. So I haven't made that public yet, but by hunches that they probably will like it and will not probably mind whether it's called a museum or not. Because, people in Nishihara are very active and very positive thinking. So they would like to see themselves, in the web page, and they like other people to watch them play. So that's some of the reactions I've been getting, when I did show the films. So I don't think it will create much of a problem, I hope.
I'm sure there are other questions.
Sure. Just to sort of follow on a little bit from what Mark was saying and thinking about the relationship between the open section and the closed section, one of our experiences at the Museum of Archaeology and Anthropology here is that with some of the communities that we work with, they're very happy for information to be involved and participate in making information accessible, but there's often information about them that they would prefer wasn't accessible to everyone. And whether you have any plans or provisions to be able to have the closed section of the website include information that's actually closed to the people who are involved and whose information it is.
Yeah.
And to what extent the development of this project has involved community consultation around those kinds of issues of access and privacy.
As I was saying, we have made more than 500 hours of recording, and probably 10/9 of which cannot be exhibited, and probably half of them must be cannot we'll probably not be able to, you know, let other people hear it or listen to it, even the, you know, closed academic communities.
Mm-hmm.
We have to be very, very careful, because this is a very spiritual community, and most of the festivals are closed to the outside world. And Miyakuzutsu probably is one of the few which can be, you know, watched from outside. But most of the, probably 90% of the festivals cannot simply be recorded or shooted by video. And we'll not allow the presence of outsiders. Okay? If you infringe upon their, you know, secrecies, then you'll be expelled. And there are some instances, for example, some researchers expelled permanently. So we have to be very, very careful, and we have been doing our research in close consultation with the local communities. And the problem is that male members are quite open, and if we ask male members only, then we'll run into trouble after our, you know, exhibition or things of that sort. Then we have to ask the female members, and there are some people who are in charge of the religious rituals, and there are two or three female, and I've been told that we have to ask them first whether it is possible to shoot or to record videotape their rituals. So all those recordings are for researchers to watch, but not for others, you know, public to watch. And these are most of the, you know, our exhibits are quite sort of safe, and have already had the approval of the local people.
Thank you.
Can I ask some probably trivial linguistic questions? I mean, we didn't really understand why the language is dying out to start with. Is it because it's being re-lexified from Japanese, or is it because people are simply switching to Japanese? If they're switching to Japanese, why? And is there any hope of reversing this process, or is this, as you know, because it's going to become a museum in the bad sense?
I don't think they will switch back to their dialects, because there is no merit in doing that in terms of economics. The Kima dialect is spoken probably by 2,000 people, and all the other people in Miyakojima Island speaking different dialects, and sometimes they are mutually unintelligible. So in order to communicate with your neighbors, you have to speak either their language, their dialect, learn their dialect, or switch to standard Japanese. Yeah. And that happens to other areas. So for example, if you go to other parts of Ryukyu, like Naha, where the the prefectural capital is, then they won't understand the language. They won't understand Yako dialects. So they have to switch to either Naha or Shuri, which is dying. Okay? So they have to use the standard dialect. And the language or the dialect of Ryukyu have begun to be, decline. I mean, so to speak, when it was incorporated into Japan. It was a different, there was a, the Ryukyu was a different dynasty, you know, 120 years ago or something like that. Before that was a Ryukyuan government, yeah, with the kings. And but they have been incorporated into the Japanese government, and they have imposed the Japanese standard language, and they have sometimes under the pressure of education, they have to learn standard Japanese, and were not allowed to speak the local dialect at home or at school. Right? And after the war, because of the mass media, everything is in standard Japanese if you watch television, right? And if you want to communicate with other people in Japan, they have to use the standard Japanese language. So they have to learn the language very quickly, I mean the standard Japanese dialect, very, very quickly when you are young. When you want to go to, you know, high school, universities, then you have to learn the language, right? And there is no use so they must have felt that they have no use for the, you know, the local dialect, which is unintelligible, 100% unintelligible to people in mainland Japan.
Just following on from that point, you mentioned that often the older generation are required to learn language for the festivals and religious occasions. Is that something in a sense that the younger generations aren't going to follow that tradition? Are they going to, well, they're not going to learn languages themselves with all the pressures from learning Japanese?
Well, in other areas, other communities in Miyakojima Island, those festivals or those rituals have already died out. No, they're not those rituals going on. So they have no occasion to speak the language in the official scene. So they might use the language for very, very informally at home. But if you mothers and fathers, your parents are bilinguals, then you don't have to use the language. You can just use the standard Japanese. And the parents will not have, don't have any incentives to use, impose their native dialects to their children, right? Mm-hmm. But in Ishihara, because they have those rituals, they have to enter into a special community called Nanamui. It's a religious ritual performing community. Then they have to use some special style language. They have to learn the language. Then they have this incentive to continue to use the dialect. And this is the standardized form of the dialect. Then you can use a dialect at home. So we can sometimes feel that the older people are better or more proficient than themselves, right? Then they respect the oldest because they use the language very, local language very well. Then which will give you, then that will give you your incentives to keep the language. That's why, very young people are still able to understand the language and have this inner incentive to memorize all those ritualistic forms.
How will most members of the community use the museum? Do most people have personal computers and broadband internet at home, and do you think they would just log in? Or is there like a community center or hall where you plan to install stations for viewing?
I think people under 50 have computers at home and have access to the internet. And I think those people are the ones who need to learn the language to understand, you know, their grandparents. So I think I'm picking use, you know, they can get access to the internet and watch the museum if there are contents interesting enough. Mm-hmm.
Can they ask questions? Can they request videos from the closed archive as well if they are aware that something they'd like to watch within the closed data? Can they ask for it so you can give them maybe a special link? If somebody from the community would like to watch a video from the closed archive, can they request that directly to you and you could send them a link so they could see something that's actually been taken out of the public area? So if video is being in the public archive and then being all never been in the public archive and put into the closed archive, can they access that information? Somebody from the community, somebody who's interested to see a ritual that maybe isn't so public?
That's what I'm doing. I send the link and the password ID, and then they can access to
access.
They have full access. They have full access.
And I wonder, perhaps, to conclude whether one of the things that's happening in digital libraries and digital museums, perhaps we could say, is that objects start creating relationships themselves with each other. So the objects themselves live, but they're associated, they're combined by users, whether they be community users or students or researchers. And if everything is properly coded, properly tagged, then that becomes a very dynamic process, and everybody creates their own museum, as it were. At the moment, the interaction is controlled by the frame of the website.
Right.
But eventually, I suppose, as you said, of course, the technology could be ported to other communities. It's not locked into only Ikema. Then it could become something like a digital library, a greenstone or collection space, which we have researchers in Cambridge working on, the Reciprocal Research Network. We also have colleagues here in Cambridge working on that, spring to mind, as a place where the objects come alive. They become interactive because people make relationships between them.
So what I'm planning to do is this is only a prototype. So now every coding is done by the digital contents team, and I can't fully access the the site and change it. Only the subtitle part can be changed by us. So what I'm trying to do within a year or so is to make that a very simple. Type in so that we can, make our own museum or room inside the museum, space. We can first get into the space, and then you can create your own room and do your own exhibit.
Mm.
And the local people can do that if they have enough resources. And there are people who are very good at internet, and they can put. On their own exhibits.
Well, on that hopeful note, thank you very much, and thank you all for your time.